shackled and surrounded by 3 chains and 4 cords, bragging about her independence. I brushed the back of my fingers over her cheek a few times, and she let her eyes drift shut. She sank deeper into the grass, as if the weight of the world were pressing down on her. I reached up and stroked her hair, unable to resist sneaking glances at her cords. Unforgiving, self-hating, insecure, defiant. I felt like a stalker, like I'd just picked the lock on her diary. I had to admit, though, knowing just like I did, the descriptions were spot on. She tried to come off as confident, better than others even, but it was all a mask. I was no psychologist, but I'd always known Jess had a hard time liking herself. Your shoes are coming untied. I moved toward her feet. No, they're not. She grinned. I pulled her laces loose, then tied them again, scanning the open cuffs at the ends of her chains. Bill Edwin Thompson. Her dad. Weird. Her mother's name was on the next cuff. Weird again. The third chain, Jeffrey Joel Thompson. Another relative, I figured, but who? I went back to my spot next to her in the grass, our shoulders touching. I hesitated then. Jess, has someone hurt you? A family member, maybe? Done something unforgivable? She bolted up like I'd jabbed her with a cattle prod. What do you mean? I sat up too. Just wondering. Her eyes glossed over, like she couldn't see anything but the thoughts inside her head. Well, she practically whispered. My dad has done some things, and I got the feeling she wanted to tell me more, but she was scared. You can trust me, Jess. I meant it. She looked almost catatonic for a moment, then snapped her head around at me. Why would you ask me that? Slightly personal, isn't it? Well, yeah, I just thought. One minute you don't want anything to do with me, and the next you want me to tell you my deepest, darkest secrets? She had a point. I motioned for her to lie back down beside me, but she wouldn't. I studied her face. I have an idea. When she quit breathing so hard and relaxed her shoulders, I shared it. What if you come clean with me, and I come clean with you? She thought about it, plucking up blades of grass and flicking them aside. Fine, but you have to go first. I wasn't thrilled about her counteroffer, but I was willing to go along with it under one condition. Promise me you'll try to believe me. Fine, go. Deep breath. You know how I told you I drank some water in the woods, then started feeling weird and, seeing things? Yeah? Well, I'm still feeling weird and seeing things. Terrible things. She turned toward me. What did the doctor say? I didn't... Oh yeah, my lie had caught up with me. It wasn't any help, so I got the water tested, but the results came back clean. Nothing abnormal, Ms. Barnett told me. If you're seeing things, why haven't you, like, gone to a psychiatrist? I sat up. Well, it's complicated, Jess. At first, I assumed I was hallucinating, that I was totally delusional and needed psychological help, serious help. But now, I'm not so sure. Some of the things I see actually seem to add up. What do you mean? Better to keep it vague. I can see certain things about people, what they're struggling with, and who they're struggling with, I think. She leaned away from me. So that's why you asked if there's someone I can't forgive? You think that's my issue? Well, yeah. I said it as nicely as I could. It's one of your issues. I obviously wasn't nice enough. She stood and slapped the grass off her legs. What about you, Owen? What are your issues? Mine? Yeah, You're so aware of what everyone else needs. What about you? Well, actually, there are some of us who don't appear to have any issues. I knew it sounded arrogant, but it was true. How convenient. Looks like you're already a doctor, aren't you? You know everyone's problems and exactly how to fix them. She stormed off, refusing to listen as I tried to explain that I actually had no idea how to help anyone. I called out to her, but she kept moving. She pounded out a text on her cell, hitting send as I came close to her. I pleaded with her to come back, to at least let me drive her to my house to get her car. But within minutes, there was Dan, speeding up in his spotless red truck. She hopped in, then rolled down her window. You're psychotic, Owen. Dan snickered, then gasped it, leaving me standing in the middle of the street. My heart was stampeding like a herd of cattle. So much for trying to believe me. I pounded the pavement back to my bike, then sped toward Rayanne's neighborhood, my teeth clenched the whole way. I could have predicted that Jess had a defiant cord without ever reading it. I told her my personal stuff, but she'd shared nothing, and then insulted me. I pulled out my cell to send Jess a text, but since I had nothing but hateful things to say, I didn't bother. The longer I drove, the more tense I got. But by the time I finally spotted Rayanne's house, I'd cooled off some. No doubt that the house was hers. There was a drill team yard sign with her name on it. It was a modest neighborhood, mostly one-stories. I was ready to go straight for the kill, walk up to the door and knock, but something in the cul-de-sac caught my attention. There were several small children chasing each other. Like the two boys I'd seen before, they didn't have shackles or anything abnormal. But when they faced me head-on, I could see a blinding, concentrated, colorful light near each child's heart, piercing through their clothing. It was like a blazing star, completely captivating. It was similar to the illumination I'd seen on Rayanne and the others at my school, only this was brighter and filled one tiny spot in their chests instead of shining around their feet. I stood there a while, strangely comforted. I snapped a picture with my cell, but everything extraordinary was missing from the image. Eventually, I faced Rayanne's house again, walked up, and knocked on the door. Her mother answered, a short, plump lady with an apron on. She glowed, too. Interesting. Hi, I'm Owen Edmonds. I reached out and shook her hand. I thought I'd feel some sort of sensation when making contact with a glowing person. Nope. Is Rayanne here? A minute later, she was on the front porch with me. Hey, Rayanne. She looked at me like I was wearing a dress or something. Owen. I pointed to myself like a preschooler, then slid both hands into my pockets. I remember your name. Are you okay? I was trying to act normal, but obviously failing. Yeah, absolutely. Look, I just want you to know that I'm sorry about what happened with Jess in the hall the other day. She shrugged. It's no big deal. So, what are you up to tonight? Well, it's laundry night, so... Awesome. We stared at the doormat and fidgeted. Crickets were chirping. Literally. I took another stab at it. Hey, you want to go out tomorrow, you know, get to know each other? Her eyebrows pressed together. You mean a date? No, just like me and you going to dinner and talking. Great, the textbook definition of date. I wouldn't have blamed her if she'd slammed the door in my face. I can't tomorrow, but I can Friday night. Cool. I sighed, hugely relieved. But what about Jess? She's your girlfriend, right? Oh, that's over. Completely. Sorry. No, it's... Never mind. So, like, 6 o'clock Friday? I'll pick you up? My treat. Sure. Tell me again why you want to go out.
I just want to get to know you. Like, yeah, get to know you better.
She blinked and blinked.
Okay, yeah, sounds good.
An eye roll, but followed by a playful smile.
Just so you know, my parents will want to meet you. You'll need to come in and talk to them before we go out on our not-a-date.
She chuckled.
Yeah, of course. A bit old-fashioned, but I could respect it.
We exchanged cell numbers, then talked a minute about how awful things had gotten at school.
She didn't know the half of it.
She was easy to talk with and even easier to look at. Not only because she was cute, but because her neck was shackle-free, and there was nothing but pretty blonde hair coming out of her head. I also noticed that her eyes were a striking light blue. Not sure how that got past me before. Funny how girls like Rayanne could get so lost in the crowd at school. Pretty didn't cut it. Sexy got the job done. I tried not to stare, but it was kind of hard, especially with someone who was glowing. It was dark by the time I left. I hadn't planned to be out after sunset. I nearly ran over a kid on a skateboard. He wore an I Survived a Semester at Masonville High t-shirt, my new life motto. By the time I reached my street, the only light was in small patches under street lamps. Wouldn't you know it, I picked up on a rancid stench. Then I saw it. A creeper lurked in a driveway a few houses ahead. I came to a stop and spied on the creature, observing its jerky movements. A man pulled his car up next to it. The guy was on his cell, fumbling with his keys as he meandered toward his house. The creeper followed, then hunched down and selected a chain. By the time the man went inside, it was rummaging through his squirming cords. I raced home. As best I could tell, these hateful beings used a person's messed-up relationships and crappy attitudes to torment and manipulate them. I couldn't figure out exactly how it worked, but I believed they tricked people into feeling so bad that they acted out, like the creeper with hopeless on its forehead worked to make Riley feel hopeless, and the one sporting accuser threw accusations at my mom until she felt horrible and self-destructive, all without them knowing it. Think about it. What better strategy is there to destroy an opponent than to go stealth? To do your most damaging work under the cloak of invisibility? And even if some cursed soul like me happens to discover what's really going on, the truth is so far-fetched that no one will believe it. My stories sounded more like the plot of some crazy novel than real life. And I was sure that was exactly the way the creepers wanted it. They despised the human race, but why? What had we ever done to them? Seemed to me they were attacking us without cause, like we were victims of their inability to do anything but hate. At first, I thought maybe they were out to take over Earth, to extinguish humanity and repopulate our planet with their debased species. But the more I observed them, the more it appeared like they were content to let us be here as long as they could, abuse and assault us. But to what end? I seldom gave much thought to God, but the creepers seemed to be pretty concrete proof that he didn't exist. No loving, just deity would let these things run free. The only higher power overseeing humanity was an army of invisible thugs. The next morning, first period was miserable. Not just because Dan was there, but because that nasty lust monster was still tied to him. Like usual, Dan ran his mouth, rubbing it in my face that he was with Jess now. Whatever. At least I didn't have a 9-foot ogre chanting spells into my soul. Between first and second period, I noticed three creepers huddled together in a dim corner. They paid no attention to me as long as I didn't say what was written on their faces. Interestingly, all three of these creepers had the same name. Violence. They looked at each other as if communing, like soldiers in the same bloodthirsty troop, strategizing,
but they verbalized nothing. They just nodded now and then. One of them opened its massive hand and zigzagged a jagged fingernail across the surface of its palm. It shoved its palm in the other creepers' faces. Then it flicked its wrist awkwardly, causing a thin layer of skin to fling off and float toward the floor. I kept my eye on the grotesque thing. The piece of skin sailed through the air, ushered across the hallway by the students' oblivious movements. I followed it all the way past the science wing and into the language arts pod, where it lodged on the floor against a locker. The bell rang. Finally, the hallways cleared. I dropped to my knees and took as close a look as I could. It reminded me of elementary school, when my friends and I would paint our palms with Elmer's glue, then peel off a thin layer of what looked like dead skin. Only this really was skin. And it had an inscription. 52359M. I extended my finger, and the instant I made contact, the corner touching my skin deteriorated. I pulled my hand away. A girl I didn't know turned down the hallway. "Hey, will you come here, please?" I said it as politely as I could, then pointed. "Are you able to see that? It's not a piece of paper, it's something else."
"Yeah, what is it?"
"You see it, are you sure? What does it say? Could there finally be some proof of my sanity?" I held my breath. She crouched on the floor next to me.
"I think it says 523, then SGM.
Yes, that's it."
"Okay."
She got up. "So?" My surge of excitement fizzled. What was I supposed to say? A creeper wrote this note on its hand, then flung it to the floor. Yeah, right.
Someone dropped it.
She leaned over to pick it up. I freaked out. "No, don't touch it. It'll dissolve."
"Whatever."
She walked off. I felt almost euphoric. I didn't know how much that note could prove to anyone else, but it was crucial evidence for me. What I was seeing was real. I took a picture of it, and there it was, in my photo stream, clear as day. An assistant principal caught me on the floor. "I dropped something. I'm going to class now, Ms. I left the note and ran to class. This was a breakthrough discovery for sure, but there was still a ton I needed to uncover about the creepers. What was their mission? What were those numbers and letters about? Most important, how could they be defeated? I knew I should look for weaknesses, search for a vulnerability I could exploit, but I was afraid they had none. Creepers were clearly at the top of the food chain, the most vicious hunters, with no one brave enough or big enough to hunt them. Or so I thought. Chapter 13. I was still mad at Jess, and my friendship with Lance was definitely strained, but I tossed my backpack on the sofa and texted each of them anyway. "Can you come over?" I felt compelled to tell them about my latest finding. I knew they weren't likely to believe any of it, and I was probably making a huge mistake, but I wanted them to see the picture of the creeper note. Maybe this time they'd at least give my claim some thought. Lance replied, "Coming." I didn't hear from Jess, but 15 minutes later they both pulled up at my house. They sat across from me, and I made my case like a trial lawyer, pleading with a jury. "I told you both that I've been seeing some very strange and freaky things lately. Neither of you believed me, but I understand. I'd have a hard time believing me, too. Jess, yesterday you called me psychotic." I acted like it didn't infuriate me. "I want to show you guys something, proof that I'm not crazy." I pulled up the picture of the creeper note. "See that?" Jess took a look.
"What is it?"
She passed the phone to Lance. "It's a note. But not just any note." I wiped my sweaty palms on my jeans and exhaled.
Look, this is going to sound like something out of a sci-fi movie, but it's not. It's real, and I need you to take me seriously this time, okay? They nodded, but I doubted their sincerity. I was about to make a fool of myself again. I had to try, though. So there are these creepy, huge things that walk around our school, everywhere really, but there's tons at our school. They latch onto people and try to brainwash them or something. I don't know why I can see them and you can't, but I saw three creepers, that's what I call them, grouped together today in the hallway, and one of them wrote this note, then tossed it to the floor. I left out that it used its fingernail to etch the message on its palm. No way I was going there. I chased the note down and took a picture of it, and I wanted to show you guys so you'd know I'm not making all this stuff up. I cut my eyes to Jess. I'm not psychotic. Lance stared at the phone again, then passed it back to Jess. She zoomed in, then gave it back to him. This back and forth went on for a while, like a stupid game of hot potato. I forced myself to stay calm. So? Lance cleared his throat. Owen. He paused for an eternity. I'm really, really worried about you. This isn't funny. You need help, dude. Jess nodded. You do. This is scary. But what about the picture? That's proof that this isn't all in my mind. I wouldn't lie about this. You want us to believe that some invisible creature thing wrote this? Jess shook her head. That's so crazy. This was going nowhere. Just forget it, seriously. Don't worry about it. I stood and reached for my phone. Thanks for stopping by. It's all good. Not really, but I wanted them and their metal appendages to leave. I walked them to the door, hoping they would drive off and forget everything I'd just said. Unfortunately, Lance wasn't done. Owen, promise me you'll go talk to someone, a doctor or a counselor or something. I nodded, then shut the door and did the only thing I knew to do, flip on the TV, and try to escape my distorted world for a while. I fully believed by now that what I was seeing was real, but I had my moments, like this one, when I second-guessed everything. Jess sent me a text. I wish I could help you, but I don't know what to think of your stories. I texted back. I really don't either. My mother's new boyfriend dropped her off, and she barricaded herself in her bedroom with a bottle of wine. She'd been avoiding me ever since I'd tried to tell her about the creeper 2 nights ago. I did the best I could to finish some homework, but it was super hard to focus on anything other than the supernatural. I decided to type up a timeline of events, beginning with the day that I drank the water and developed a non-stop belly freeze. It was unbelievable how much had happened in just 10 days. On Thursday morning, I planned to stay home. But then Daisy stood outside my mother's bedroom door, growling. I could handle seeing creepers in public better than dealing with them in my house. I decided to go to school, and on the drive there, I analyzed how to play my cards right the next night with Rayanne. I needed to get information from her, without scaring her off. I wasn't looking forward to Jess finding out that I was going out with someone, and she would find out. Rayanne was on the drill team. Gossip among those girls spread around the school like mold on stale bread. It didn't matter that Jess was on the fast track with Dan. She was going to freak. Odd. 1 minute I was worrying about endangered souls, and the next about petty rumors. Walking the hallways was extra challenging today. There were more of the vicious words scribbled all over the place this week than last, marking up lockers, bathroom stalls, ceiling tiles, you name it. Some appeared to be fading while others looked fresh. Finally, on my way to third period, I solved the mystery of the graffiti. I saw a creeper raise its skin and bones arm and use its grimy finger to write the word "hate" above the entrance to the library. for reasons beyond me, words were obviously significant to creepers. My moods were all over the place. But as I made my way to the cafeteria for lunch, I was boiling over with a sense of injustice. Everything about this was unfair. The way I saw it, humans were defenseless prey, sitting ducks with no camouflage or refuge. Which was worse? Witnessing evil at work or being ignorant of it? Both felt like a death sentence. I collapsed into a chair at my lunch table, a few seats down and across from Jess. Here came Dan, grinning, holding his new purchase up to his chest, one of those yellow I Survived Masonville High shirts. He lowered into a chair next to Jess. She rolled her eyes the second she saw him. "That's not funny, Dan." She got up and started to walk away, but he grabbed her arm. "Sit down." I thought for sure she was going to deck him. Instead, she swallowed hard, then sat. He didn't let go of her. I'd had enough of this punk. I was already popping my knuckles when Dan clamped down harder on Jess's arm, and she winced. That was it. I shot out of my seat. "Let her go." Dan looked me up and down, then huffed. "Or what?" My fingers curled into tight fists. "Or I'll make you." There was a collective gasp around us. I guess Principal Harding noticed. She came charging over to our table. "What's going on here?" Dan had escaped to another table and was chatting with friends like he'd done nothing wrong. The principal looked at me. "Owen?" Jess stared a hole through me, pleading with her eyes to let it go. I sat down. "Everything's fine." Harding scanned the table, then finally left. Jess dug through her purse and pulled out her inhaler, then took a hit. I walked over to her and leaned down, speaking into her ear. "You have no business covering for that lowlife, and please don't ask me to keep quiet like that ever again. You deserve way better, Jess." She took a second hit from her inhaler. "You all right?" She nodded, her eyes pooling. I rubbed a gentle hand over her arm where he'd grabbed a hold of her. There was no creeper attached to Dan provoking him. No excuse for what he'd just done. As I went back to my seat, I seriously considered walking over and breaking Dan's nose, ruining his GQ face. But right then, Megan approached Jess, dressed in her cheer uniform. A creeper followed behind Megan like an oppressive shadow. It motioned toward another creeper. I clenched my jaws. "Two at once? Not on your life." I had no action plan, just charged over to Megan. The accomplice's name stood out, a wound stretched across its forehead. Demise. I must have said it out loud. The snarly thing contorted its head and peered down at me for a heart-stopping moment, then went to work with its putrid partner. They shrank to the floor and shoved their wrists into two open cuffs. The sound of the cuffs snapping shut was like the slamming of massive metal doors. I couldn't separate the visible from the invisible. "Stop it, leave her alone." A hush fell over the whole cafeteria, but I didn't stop. "You have no right to do this, stop it." Megan's eyelids went wide and her cheeks flashed red. Jess stood up. "Owen, what are you doing?" I heard Dan laughing, but it didn't matter. I grabbed a soda can off the lunch table and hurled it at the beasts. Sprite flew everywhere, but the can passed right through the creepers. Megan probably thought I was aiming for her. She started crying. Words flew out of my mouth machine gun style, aimed at thin air as far as everyone else was concerned. The dark ritual continued as the creepers moved in perfect sync. They thumbed through the cords drooping from Megan's head and made their strategic selections. But suddenly, the creepers looked up, tilting their heads back, fear all over their mutilated faces. What could they possibly be afraid of? I looked around and found my answer. Chapter 14. He was enormous, at least 5 feet taller than the creepers, and a blinding crystal-white radiance penetrated the space around him. I was too astounded to cover my eyes, overwhelmed by a rush of euphoria, an extraordinary sensation of peace I never knew existed. Although I could only stand to look at him for seconds at a time, I could see that his massive body was sculpted to perfection. He wore the most bad-looking platinum-silver armor I'd ever seen. I don't know when I hit the ground, but at some point it registered that I was on my stomach, straining to look up and steal glances at him. And wow, the fragrance! He gave off a magnificent scent that overpowered the creeper's putrid stench, like high-end men's cologne, but better than anything I'd ever smelled. His movements were fluid and effortless, a supernatural being prepared for the fiercest of battles. The human language cannot describe his flawless complexion or the passion and fury contained in his eyes. He didn't look much older than me, but there was nothing boyish about him. A thin gold crown encircled his glorious head, beaming over his wavy brown hair. I didn't need to be told that it signified authority far greater than any earthly power. I felt a tight grip on my arm, but I paid no attention. I was witnessing another dimension, beholding a life form that exceeded the most epic of fairy tale heroes. I was lifted upright, but my knees buckled, and I dropped to the floor again as another colossal being of equal stature and strength appeared on the other side of Megan, this one dark-skinned, with the most massive biceps. The creepers went ballistic, jerking and convulsing in their rush to pull away from Megan's cords and cuffs. I had the bizarre feeling that I was standing outside of time as the two immense allies closed in on the creepers. I couldn't be the only one who felt the earth shudder. They had no weapons in their hands. They didn't need them. Finally unbound from Megan, the creepers planted their faces to the floor and writhed, but didn't hiss a sound. The mere presence of these glowing beings seemed to be unleashing suffering on the creepers. At last, the tormentors were tormented. The monsters slithered on their stomachs, inching away from the light until they were far enough to crawl. Then they scrambled to their feet and ran. I focused on the Avengers, desperate to memorize every detail of their appearance. But I was interrupted by the sensation of pain in both arms. I was hoisted up, then felt my body spin, forcing me to face the opposite direction. Two male teachers had a hold of me. My feet dragged on the floor all the way to the nurse's office. Then I tumbled onto the stiff, plastic bed. The nurse scrambled to take my temperature and blood pressure, then warned Principal Harding that my body was cold and my blood pressure soaring. That's what happens when you carry a blizzard in your belly and stand an arm's length away from supernatural rivals. It was like a nightmare, only with a glorious finish. I heard Lance ask the nurse if I was all right. I guess my secret was out. Everyone had seen me explode. I wanted so bad to get up and find Megan. I wanted her to know that she was at the center of an epic fight, the treasured prize of two fierce opposing forces. And I wanted to tell her that the good side won today. They won without ever having to raise a fist. Principal Harding knelt down and spoke close to my face. Too close. "Owen, I just got off the phone with your mother. She's on her way." I was relieved when she backed off, but then a school counselor got right back in my face. "Owen, how are you feeling?" "I don't know. Are you aware of what just happened?" I wanted to ask her the same thing. "What were you doing, Owen?" This was no time to crack and get thrown into a treatment center. I had to see those warriors again, appeal to them for help. "I let the stress get to me, that's all. I haven't been sleeping lately. I've been worried about college and my friends with all this suicide stuff. I just lost it for a minute. I'll be okay." She looked at me with big, adoring eyes. Bless your heart. Why don't I issue you a homework pass so you can rest tonight, then come see me first thing in the morning?
Phew, dodged that bullet.
I wasn't sure what to expect from my mother, though.
As far as she was concerned, this was the second episode this week, and she was already leery of me. Who knows? She might show up with a straitjacket.
I stared at the ceiling tiles, trying to process what I'd just witnessed. It was larger than life. It was like watching life versus death. I wiped my eyes. Why were they pooling? It wasn't because I'd completely humiliated myself, and it wasn't because I was afraid of what my mother would say. I wasn't sad, actually. Clarity came over me like a soft breeze, but I tried to squelch it because it felt like something supernatural. No, it was more like something spiritual. That was the unfamiliar territory for me. But before I could stop the thought, it was echoing across my mind. I've always believed we are alone, each of us left to fight life's trials on our own. But now I know better. Something, someone, cares. That realization choked me up. And it freaked me out. Does God actually exist? I dismissed the idea. I had to stick with what I could see and discount what I couldn't. Yes, I was aware of the irony. But the reality was, I hadn't seen God. I'd seen good forces triumph over evil today. That's it. And where did champions go? Why didn't they help more? Why not annihilate the creepers entirely? I closed my eyes and considered a new life equation. The war between good and evil is real. But evil doesn't stand a chance, so long as the good guys show up. My mother spent a while in the counselor's office before I was released. I promised I was feeling good enough to drive my motorcycle home, and she didn't push back. I got the idea she'd rather not be confined in a tight space with me. I went straight to my room, got my laptop out, and added to my timeline. What to call the Avengers? I settled on Watchmen. My phone lit up with texts. I figured it would help downplay the situation to reply and assure people I was fine. If only that were true. Rayanne had texted. She must have been pretty horrified to hear that the guy she'd made plans with for tomorrow had completely flipped out in front of half the school. She asked if I was okay, and I replied with an apology and a promise. I'm sorry I acted like an idiot today. I hope you still want to hang out. I won't cause a scene, I swear. She didn't break our plans, a huge relief. I still held out hope that I'd discover something revolutionary. I just hoped I could keep my promise to not freak out and humiliate us both.
Chapter 15. Friday morning, I thought about skipping school, but I worried the watchman might show up again and I'd miss it. I really wanted to see them get physical with the creepers. I had no doubt the watchman would put a major beatdown on them. I tried going straight to first period, but the counseling police summoned me to the office. That same big-eyed counselor lady explained that they'd arranged for me to have a mentor. Given yesterday's cry for help, we believe you'll benefit greatly from the program. Do I have to? Like I wanted some shackled stranger trying to fix me. We can't force you to participate, but we believe that meeting with your mentor twice a week will be highly rewarding for you and him. You've been assigned to one of Masonville's finest. What I'd been assigned to was the official at-risk student list. Not my proudest moment. In walked a tall man in a tailored suit. Polished shoes, tarnished shackle.
Owen, this is Dr. Bradford, a physician.
The counselor turned to go, but not without repeating, one of Masonville's finest. Her cheesy attempt at flirting made things even more awkward. Dr. Bradford shook my hand, firm and confident. His face was oddly familiar.
We lowered into chairs across from each other, and I mulled it over. Bradford. A doctor. Then it clicked. So much irony, I practically choked on it. You're Dan Bradford's father?
Guilty as charged.
He smiled, same dimples as Dan. Even before our minute of small talk, I was ready to end this. But then,
Owen, I know who you are. I was very close to your grandparents.
Wow. For the first time in my life, someone might actually tell me something about my relatives.
He leaned in toward me. They were devastated when your mother ran away. I met them shortly after, as a teenager, and despite their grief, they graciously opened their home to me, at a trying time in my life. They treated me like I was their own son, taught me countless invaluable principles about life, and spirituality.
There was no indication he was lying. And yet, how could I believe him? My grandparents had been horrible, abusive people. That's the one thing my mother had told me. I made your grandparents a promise. If I ever had the pleasure of meeting you, I swore I'd tell you how much they longed to know you. If only your mother. It was too much to take in. The idea that my mom may have walked out on perfectly loving parents. Was she that messed up? That totally selfish? I bolted out of my chair. If you were so close to my grandparents, why'd they leave their estate to me and not you? He calmly stood, giving me a compassionate smile. They wanted you in this town in the hope that you would someday carry on their family legacy here, charitable works and religious activism. He stepped close.
Owen, I swore to your grandmother on her deathbed that if you came to Masonville, I'd teach you the principles and way of life they so diligently instilled in me.
He took a nostalgic glance at our surroundings.
And here we are, matched in a mentoring program. Can you believe it?
I was still confused, but found myself starting to believe him.
I want you to know something. He spoke with the passion of a coach rallying an exhausted team. I can teach you incredible things, self-assurance, keys to success and influence like you've never known.
I wasn't sure what to say to that.
Do you have a father, Owen? A man who's investing in your future?
I was willing to give an honest answer, but paralyzing shame came over me so that I could barely shake my head no.
I understand, he said, placing a hand on my shoulder. You know, you could be the son I never had.
I furrowed my brow. You already have a son. He dropped his chin and let out a long, exasperated sigh.
He's unteachable, reckless.
He looked me in the eyes.
Weak.
And that's when his whole vibe changed. The compassion was all gone from his face, but way worse than that, his eyes turned different, dark and cloudy, threatening as a creeper's, and the temperature in the room plummeted. I took a big step back. I'd better get to class. I darted out of there, swearing to myself that I was forever done with the mentoring program. I admit that for a second there, I had liked the thought of having an accomplished man, a doctor even, take an interest in my life. But Dr. Bradford was clearly not a good person. What had I just witnessed? I meandered to class and slid into my chair, even more curious and confused about my relatives. I glanced at Dan, in the back row as usual. It was hard to believe, but it was actually possible his home life was about as messed up as mine. The watchman didn't bother coming back to Masonville High that day, Jess texted me after school. Miss you. You want to hang out tonight? I don't know which was more baffling, making sense of my paranormal world or trying to figure out why females do what they do. Why would she want to spend time with a crazy person? Her words, mind you. Didn't matter. I had plans with Rayanne. I was hoping to keep that on the down low, though, so I took the easy way out. Sorry, have to help my mom do stuff around the house. I always did most of the chores anyway, so it wasn't a total lie, just a mini lie. She replied right away. Okay, call me this weekend. I went ahead and said I would, then added, really hope you stay away from Dan. She replied with a thumbs up. I could only hope that meant she would. I jumped in the shower to get ready for my date. More like fact-finding mission. It was hard to tell if I was nervous because I was going out with a girl I barely knew, or because I no longer trusted myself to act rationally. I didn't want to tell her too much, but I feared I would. And I hoped I could ignore the supernatural distractions, but I feared I couldn't. I styled my hair to perfection and sprayed on some cologne. I talked my mom into letting me use her SUV for the night, then headed out the door, fighting back the nerves building in my gut. Adrenaline and a belly freeze didn't mix well. Rayanne welcomed me inside her house. Thankfully, there was still nothing around her neck except a cross necklace. I stood by the sofa and tried to figure out what to do with my hands. No matter where I put them, it felt unnatural. I was like a geek trying to look cool. Her parents came into the living room together, both glowing, literally. They stood by their daughter for a moment, and a whiff of something wonderful hit me. Weird, I know. Mr. Greiner approached and gave me a super firm, confident handshake. It's great to see you again, Rayanne's mom said, hugging me. Unexpected, but nice, I guess. They sat and motioned for me to sit across from them. So, tell us about yourself, Mr. Greiner said. I'm a psycho who sees beings from another dimension. Mind if I take your daughter out? I went with a different approach. Well, I'm a senior. Moved here from Boston almost 4 months ago. I played on the basketball team at my old school. I run track here. And I always drive the speed limit. We all laughed, except Mr. Greiner. The interrogation continued. How did you meet Rayanne? She was the first person I met at Masonville High. I thought it would be good to connect again. A stupid answer, but it was the best I had. What are your plans for tonight? Mr. Greiner crossed his arms and leaned back in his chair. I'm taking Rayanne out for dinner. I mean, if that's okay with you. Mr. Greiner stood and pulled me to the side. It was just as awkward as it sounds. Owen, you look like a nice young man. You know that I'm entrusting you with one of the most precious people in my life. I have faith in you that you're going to act like a gentleman and treat my daughter with decency and respect tonight. Oh, yes, sir, I will, of course. I really did have good intentions toward her. As Rayanne and I headed out, Mr. Greiner gave her a hug and me a heavy pat on my shoulder. Really heavy. I decided to take Rayanne to the Riverwalk in San Antonio. It was over an hour away, but I'd heard Lance say he and Megan loved going there, and the long drive would give us more time to talk. Our conversation on the way there was more comfortable than I'd thought it would be. We kept making each other laugh, which was cool. I couldn't help noticing Rayanne's beautiful, muscular legs, but I tried not to let my thoughts get away from me. Mr. Greiner's handprint still stung on my back. By the time we got to the Riverwalk and parked, the sun was setting. Rayanne's glow looked even more spectacular in the dark. As unusual as it was, nothing about it felt weird. It seemed natural, like something everybody should have. It was a good social scene, neon lights, live music, buzzing restaurants. But it made me jumpy. I hated crowds now. And of course, there were creepers in the mix. The word sick was slopped on the side of a restaurant in huge lowercase letters. That didn't help my nerves. I settled on an upscale seafood restaurant. Not cheap, but it had a great atmosphere. It took almost an hour, but we were finally seated at a candlelit table next to a massive aquarium loaded with rainbow-colored fish and a few sharks. It was awesome. And, to be honest, slightly romantic. In the dim restaurant, Ray Ann's illumination reflected upward, creating a soft shimmer on her face. It was so intriguing. It was nearly a perfect moment, the only downer being that I kept catching whiffs of creeper odor. So, what's your family like? It was a reasonable question for her to ask, thoughtful even, but it threw me. It's just me and my mom. Oh. She cleared her throat. Is she strict? Not even a little. Lucky. No. It's not as awesome as you think. My mom is... I took a sip of my sweet tea, as if I could swallow my discomfort. Come on, she can't be that bad. Trust me. A cute smile crept across her face. From what I can tell, she raised a good son. I've never been one to blush, but she got me on that one. What about you? I said. Your parents seem like the perfect... They're not. Her whole demeanor changed. I didn't feel comfortable pressing her for an explanation, and she quickly changed the subject, her tone upbeat again. I heard you stood up to Dan at lunch yesterday when he was being mean to Jess. I was glad she'd brought that situation up instead of my soda-throwing meltdown. I gave a nod, then leaned in toward her. What's the deal with that guy? She had no problem making eye contact with me. I know he's popular and all, but there's something dark about him. Sad, really. If she only knew. She took a deep breath, then dropped her chin. He made my brother's freshman year miserable. Picked on him. She took a sudden interest in her menu. So you have a brother? She swallowed hard, formed a polite smile as her eyes welled. Had. He passed away. Way to go, Slick. I wanted to kick myself under the table. Oh, I'm so sorry. I wondered how he'd died, but it felt rude to ask. It's okay, really. She smiled at me like we'd known each other forever. I'm just glad you're willing to stand up for people. We need that at our school. I'm not sure how she did it, but she made me feel like the most important guy in the room. I liked her already. We scanned the menu and chatted about what foods we did and didn't like until our conversation was interrupted. I looked over my shoulder and saw a tall, well-dressed lady shouting at a man. Her husband? And there was that filthy creeper I'd been smelling, attached to her. I turned back around. Ray Ann was engrossed in their heated conversation, mouth open. I don't know why I put up with you, the lady said. What's wrong with you? The man stood and his chair fell over. More heads turned. I looked back again at the creeper. You just love destroying lives, don't you? The couple stormed away from their table, and the waitress chased them down. That's one way to get out of paying the check, Ray Ann said. We both laughed, then went back to minding our own business. I was stabbing ice cubes with my straw when Ray Ann said, I can't imagine being attacked by one of those vicious things. I nearly spilled my drink. You see them too? She pointed to the aquarium. The sharks? My excitement deflated. Oh, yeah. I worked to regain my composure. She inched her chair forward.
Are you all right?
Absolutely. I changed the subject. So everyone has theories about what's causing the suicides. How about you? She'd stuffed a fried shrimp in her mouth, but as soon as she was able, she said, Honestly, I think it's the devil. I gave her a blank, awkward stare. That's a joke, right?
No. I mean, I'm not like the protesters or anything.
Good to know, I said, consuming a shrimp myself.
Yeah.
She giggled, but only for a second. I do think it's a satanic attack, though. She dabbed her lips with her napkin. Why our school? I have no idea. Let me get this straight. You believe in a literal Satan? She raised an eyebrow. You don't? I sat up tall. I do agree that our school is under attack. Actually, I'm sure of it. But I can't say for sure what they are, where they come from. Now it was her turn to look at me with a confused, awkward stare.
What do you mean?
You know that feeling when you're strapped into a mega coaster and it's about to change from clanking uphill to free-falling? That's how I felt. I'd promised myself I'd take it slow, but then again, I had no way of knowing our conversation would go in this direction, much less this quickly. I let go of my fork, put both palms flat on the table, and lowered my voice. Rayanne, if I tell you something unbelievable, something frightening and absurd and just totally bizarre, will you try to believe me? She thought a moment, tucking a strand of hair behind her ear and smearing what was left of her lip gloss in the process.
I will.
She said it like she really meant it. I was probably setting myself up for a major letdown, but I was actually tempted to believe her. Our waitress came and dropped off the check. I looked around.
Can we get out of here first?
We spied a bench in a grassy area in the distance, away from the crowd and bright lights. Everything looked navy blue in the moonlight, except the sidewalk below Rayanne's feet. I gazed at the sky, but there wasn't a single star to fix my eyes on. Rayanne stared at me like a kid at story time, anxious for me to get on with it. I was back at the top of the coaster. I took a deep breath, then went for it. I started at the beginning, and by the time I'd told her how sick I'd gotten after drinking from the well, she'd slid to the edge of the bench and was hardly breathing.
Keep going, she said.
I explained how I'd seen the shackled jogger lady with chains and cords, and soon I saw them on everyone. She seemed to be tracking with me, making me believe it was safe to share more. So I told her everything, about the names on the chains and how they turned out to be real people, and the first creeper I'd ever witnessed, and how it had attached itself to Ashlyn. I eventually got to the note and how I wasn't the only one who saw it. I showed Lance and Jess, but they didn't believe my explanation. By the time I described the amazing star-looking thing kids have, I felt lighter. It was liberating to get the entire horror story off my chest, out in the open air. She asked why I'd gone berserk in the cafeteria yesterday, so I explained the whole thing. Then, as if I hadn't dumped enough on her, "The reason I asked you out is because you're different. There are some people who don't have chains or anything. Instead, there's this awesome glow-like deal around their feet. You have that, Rayanne. Your parents, too. You're not a slave to the tormentors. And I want to know why." I turned sideways to face her and moved closer. "I don't have a shackle, but I don't glow either. It's confusing, but I want to make sense of it all. I have to. People are hurting themselves and each other, and they don't even know why.